Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this a day early this week, Wednesday, January 22nd. The Super Bowl matchup is set. Travis, we got there on the tees in the baby bankroll bonanza, making a move.
That's all that matters. Make that comeback, make a final push on Super Bowl Sunday.
Nothing like a little chase late in the NFL season. So, Mr. Executive Director John Murray is going to join us for a little preview of the Super Bowl props that are going to be posted in the full allotment will be posted tomorrow. Also, we are going to discuss the line. We've seen some early movement, but it's basically a coin flip game. And it's a game, Travis, that I am thrilled about as a fan, but a very annoyed as a sports bettor because I think it's a true coin flip.
I'm just glad I can watch it and I don't care who wins.
Because your Cowboys aren't in it, so you're glad your Cowboys aren't in it?
No, what I'm saying is the Patriots and like teams that I just hate aren't
right, okay,
in it. Like, I know my Cowboys aren't going to make it.
Well said. Well said. So we'll get into that. Also, a little basketball flavor to start things off. Aaron Renning's going to join us to talk a little NBA, including Zion Williamson making his NBA debut tonight. We have a couple thoughts on some prop bets for that much-anticipated debut of the number one overall pick. And Matt Eumanns of Vegas Stats and Information Network will join us to talk a little college hoops. So we have three guests coming up, good buddies of mine, ER, Matt Eumanns, and John Murray. And we'll also have a very advanced schedule for podcast next week. We'll get into that as well. But first, I wanted to remind everyone to check out First Draft Podcast with Mel Kiper Jr. and Todd McShay. Joe Burrow most likely going first overall. But what about after that? Mel and Todd have you covered. Download and subscribe to First Draft and Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. The matchup is set, and both teams are preparing for the biggest game of the year. Time is almost up on the football season, but you still have time to feed your fantasy fix with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football. Plus, for a limited time, all new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch mean more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. DraftKings will have millions of dollars up for grabs for the big game, so you won't want to miss out. Don't want to wait till next week to get some action? DraftKings also offers basketball contests every day with hundreds of thousands of dollars up for grabs. Download the DraftKings app now and use code Doug during signup. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500 on your next deposit. That's code Doug, and you can get a deposit bonus up to $500 only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
Arguably, truer words were never spoken. Welcome in, Aaron Renning, back to the podcast. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing just great. You have to be doing good. You're in Las Vegas shortly before the Super Bowl, Doug. Of course, plenty of stuff to bet on in the next couple of days. All the props will be out, so certainly glad to be out here.
Yeah, no, it's an exciting time of year. I was there for like a week last year doing a story on prop bets, and a lot of fun catching up with everyone. But as we know, all tickets cash the same, so a first quarter line in an NBA game Super Bowl Sunday, which is like honestly like firing early on Super Bowl, kind of warming up before the Super Bowl is the best thing to do on a Super Bowl Sunday in a hoops game or something like that. But let's talk a prop bet in the NBA. And we got Zion Williamson returning tonight, obviously all the hoopla and for good reason. But in terms of handicapping this, you have 12.5 points, 5.5 rebounds. Any sort of leans, plays on this, given that he will have a, kind of a minutes count?
Yeah, it sounds like he's going to play about 20 minutes tonight, Doug. Boy, it's been a while since I remember this kind of buzz for a player coming into the league. So it's going to be exciting tonight on ESPN. And I think you have to remember, the first thing you look at, you know, how many points the Pelicans have been scoring. Going over the total in just about every game. I think the total is like 237 tonight. So kind of sticks out to probably lean over than under on those props. And you would think they would try to get him involved, especially on the home court, for the energy, et cetera. It'll be fascinating to kind of see what happens with this team. I know they've been so banged up. They've played a tough schedule. You have the trade deadline right around the corner. But this is a team that still kind of has a chance and obviously wants to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I actually prefer the over 5.5 rebounds because I think there might be some nerves, things like that. But just rebounds are instinctive, and that's effort. And I think he's going to want to demonstrate effort. Also, unknown status or uncertain status, I should say, with Jahlil Okafor and Derek Favors. And I just think his size is easily transferable. So I think with that high total, I think over 5.5 rebounds is a play for me.
You know, it's a good point because you mentioned the injury situation for New Orleans are kind of without all their bigs. You mentioned Okafor, Favors, probably pretty doubtful. It's hard to say if they're going to play or not. And, you know, the other day against Memphis, their head coach was basically saying, hey, we needed some big bodies to get out there and bang when all those guys sat against Memphis.
So, yeah, I'm over 5.5 there for the rebounds, but can't fault anyone for going over on the points as well. And come on, we all like to root for fun. Who wants to bet an under in this type of game? But to your point, the minutes count, we haven't had a certain fixed number on that. So given the limited roster or the shortened roster, he may have to play a few more minutes than maybe they originally intended. But that's neither here nor there. Obviously a big card on Wednesdays. A few games kind of jump out to me. I guess just if you have a play, fire. But if there's also like an opportunity, just kind of talk macro as we are in the second half of the season. I know earlier in the podcast, in a month or so ago, I mentioned how hard it was for me to kind of get a feel for the tendencies of these teams because there's so much turnover in the offseason. But I finally got like a rhythm here, and I do have a good feel. But any plays stick out for you?
It's funny because I actually kind of prefer as much turnover as possible. You know, I feel like I know the player personnel pretty well. You know, kind of always got an eye on chemistry. Etc. This one's getting bet up pretty good. I did bet the Lakers tonight, Doug. I laid 11 with them, of course, off that embarrassing effort the other night against the Boston Celtics. They allowed, 139 points? Remember, this is a team that's kind of built on defense. It's kind of strange. Anthony Davis comes back, and, you know, they just the defense kind of goes out the window. But I'll say this about the New York Knicks, and I've watched – I feel like I've watched just about every game the Knicks have played, probably more so since they made the coaching change, et cetera. Was actually able to make some money on them. But this team can't shoot. They can't shoot free throws. They can't shoot three-pointers. They can't shoot whatsoever, Doug. So when you have when you were thinking about playing anything with the Knicks, you kind of look to see how the opposition defends the rim, defends the paint. And you'll know, like the Knicks, I mean, a lot of teams obviously struggle with the Bucks, but the Bucks are the best team in the NBA at any kind of rim resistance that you have. But the Lakers, the last I looked, were about top three. It depends what statistic you look at. And you would think off allowing 100-some points, 130-some points, the defense is going to come to play. And, again, these two teams met 2 weeks ago, Doug, in L.A., the Knicks mustered a whole 87 points in that game. So I would go ahead and look perhaps the Lakers, if you got a chance for a team total. Knicks under the total. I think they're going to have a hard time scoring in that one.
Well, they should. And, you know, the Lakers are kind of, I don't want to say misleading, but some against the best teams, they've struggled, whether it be the Bucks, the Clippers, and I guess you can include the Celtics there, but they're a little alarming in that regard. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, you know, every team has the ebbs and flows. I mean, we're seeing it with the Houston Rockets, another team that's in action here tonight. And, you know, the Lakers played so well the first 2 months of the season. It's just so hard to continue to play at that level, especially when you have probably a little bit more of a veteran roster. I mean, what is, you know, what's the actual reason or the goal to go out there and kind of have that all effort for 80, 81, 82 games? If you will. So you figured a lull was going to come. Another play that I want to talk about, how about the other game on ESPN tonight, Philadelphia at Toronto. I did lay the points here tonight with Toronto. I was hoping to get a little bit cheaper. I know there were some sixes out there earlier today, Doug, but I'm a big fan of this Toronto team. I think Nurse is a tremendous head coach. It'll be interesting to see what this team will perhaps do, and really both of these teams do the next couple of weeks at the trade deadline. They could both use certainly another piece to contend with the Milwaukee Bucks, if you will. And, of course, keep in mind Indiana has Oladipo coming back right around the corner, et cetera. But Toronto has been so banged up all this year. If it wasn't Lowry, was out, Siakam was out, Gasol. So they got all these guys back. They had a couple of games together with them. We saw them against Atlanta kind of hold on, if you will. They beat Minnesota the game before that. But I think and another thing that Toronto has, you know, when those main players are out, it gives them a chance. They have some of the best depth in the NBA, and a lot of these guys were able to play. And I think that's the key advantage here. Philadelphia, to me, is a depth-sized team. They'll be fine once they get in the playoffs, but, I mean, to me, it's 6-7 deep. If that, and remember, Joel Embiid continues to be out for this team. So I thought this was a good spot, good situation. I like Toronto tonight.
Yeah, Philly's really limited without Embiid. I know they did some things and moved Simmons to the five for stretches, but Toronto at full strength, to your point, with Van Vliet back, Siakam, Lowry, I mean, they're just, their depth is off the charts. So that would be the only side I would look at here. You mentioned the Rockets. I'm kind of waiting for them to open up a can. I think
you've been waiting a few days.
Yeah, I haven't. Fortunately, I haven't chased. But I wonder if this is the spot here where they just kind of steamroll the Nuggets, who are so shorthanded.
You know, it's interesting. I definitely looked at that game, and I'm kind of like you, and you would kind of expect that in one of these games. And I think the schedule has been, you know, sturdy enough. You know, they played the Lakers. Oklahoma City, we know, has been tremendous, the best against the spread team. And let's face it, they did make shots. I mean, it was hard, 1 of 17 the other day. And, you know, Denver's banged up. They're without three starters. The one thing that kind of bothers me about this game, if you expect, if you are going to play the Rockets went up and down the court December 31st on New Year's Eve, if you will. Houston won that game against Denver 130-104. Now, some people might look back and say, you know, that's maybe a good matchup for this Rockets team, but I remember Malone was as mad about that game as any so far this year, and they kind of turned some things around, I thought, shortly after that. So it's kind of concerning. I would assume Denver probably has this game circled a little bit.
Yeah, they're just so shorthanded. Is Millsap and all those guys out?
Yeah, I mean, Millsap, Murray are pretty much out for sure that I saw, and Harris is doubtful. So, yeah, I would assume all three of those guys are going to be out.
Yeah.
You know, that's another team here in the Western Conference, or really in the NBA, and, you know, they're not going to rush these guys back. You know, Millsap, he kind of came back a little bit early before. So, I mean, right now they're, what, third, tied for third in the Western Conference. I mean, they're not going to get – I mean, I guess Houston's kind of looking up at them, I guess, if you will, in the standings. So, something there. But it's not like Denver's going to be out of the playoffs in the next couple of weeks. So, there's no real urgency for this team or for them to bring these guys back.
Yeah, good point. Okay. I did look at the Lakers. You raised a much better sort of justification for it. I just feel like, you know, you want to bet on a good team and off that, you know, embarrassing performance. Anything else, like the totals or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have some other stuff out there trying to think of a good total to give you.
Kings Pistons?
Yeah, you know, the Kings are an interesting, both these teams are really been dreadful so far this year, but it's just crazy with the NBA, and let's face it, I mean, Sacramento, I mean, they're the second worst team in the Western Conference, tied for the second worst team. This team had playoff aspirations. They did last year. They came up short. Obviously, the move to Luke Walton. I mean, they've only been outscored by 3.5 points, not even 3.5 points per game, which isn't great, but it's right on the same wavelength of all those other teams fighting for this 8 seed. In the Western Conference. So they've kind of changed things around a lot from the start of the year. They kindly let Fox kind of run things at the point guard position. They're playing it finally, getting back to the pace that they played at last year, Doug. They've actually played very small here as well. And, you know, that kind of coincides with the pace. But I think, you know, from a defensive standpoint, that means that they've been up against it. The defensive efficiency has kind of dropped off for this team, if you will. Again, the injury to Holmes, but Bagley is starting now. He played 30 minutes at center the other day. Deadman kind of got the other minutes, and Giles only played a couple of minutes off the bench. And those were bigs that were kind of playing, so it's really turned into kind of a small ball, Bajelica a lot, maybe at the five position. So playing a little bit more up-tempo, it sounds like we could actually have, for Detroit, Reggie Jackson maybe back in the fold, give them another point guard, another score that they desperately need. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a high-scoring game between Sacramento and Detroit tonight.
Yeah, they've been pretty thin with Kennard out and obviously Blake Griffin out. So the Pistons have been really searching for offense. I had a couple plays a week or so ago. I was banking on Langston Galloway to get it going and Christian Wood as well, and it's just tough. And if everything runs through Derrick Rose and Christian Wood, you're really
But, yeah, you still have Derrick Rose. And, again, see if they get Jackson back. They do expect him back this week. So
he's good for overs because he gives up points as well.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to get at. That's about right what I was good at. He's an over player, no question about it.
All right, my man. Well, good stuff as always. Really appreciate the insight. And, you know, we'll get you back on as now the football season's winding down.
Yeah, you know, I tell you what, you know, from a futures perspective, I think it is fascinating in the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. I need to probably take a look at those odds and kind of see where they are. Obviously, the Bucks, the overwhelming favorite in the Eastern Conference, but, you know, it's hard to get out of your mind what happened to this team the last couple of years, what happened to them last year against Toronto getting bounced out. I think Toronto, Boston, Philadelphia, Indiana, of course, Oladipo coming back. So, you know, it's a conference that goes six deep, and you never know. I mean, you don't obviously you don't want an injury to anybody, and you know, Giannis, it's still kind of a one person team to a large degree. The Bucks and the Western Conference, boy, that changes on a daily, weekly basis.
Sure does.
You know, we're just talking about the Rockets, and you know, they're the sixth seed right now, so it's another conference that kind of goes five or six deep. The Utah Jazz are playing the best basketball in anybody right now in the Western Conference. So, yeah, I'll take a look at those futures and, you know, the trade deadline coming up. So, you know, this is kind of one of the first years where things, to me, have been kind of wide open.
It's funny, last year I'm not as influenced by Kawhi because obviously the Eastern Conference landscape has changed so much. I'm more just can't get out of my head. I mean, the Bucks are on a 70-win pace. And you're seeing domination in the points per game differential, like we saw with the '96 Bulls and the Durant's first year at the Warriors, and their second best player is Chris Middleton, and that's what I'm having a hard time. Look, there's no Kawhi out there in the East that's going to tear through things. Like it is what it is. I believe in the Bucks, and you know we say like, well, they can't just because something hasn't happened, just doesn't mean it won't happen. Kind of like Virginia finally getting over the hump and winning it all. We've seen it elsewhere. I'm more worried that, like, is this team just a regular season bully?
I mean, it's kind of obvious to a degree, but I mean, they definitely improved. But that system is so good, and Giannis he's definitely, you know, he's gotten better. And remember last year in the playoffs, Doug, I mean, Malcolm Brogdon was their second best player.
Yeah,
and obviously he's on Indiana now, so. It's you know, it's funny because they've been tremendous so far this year, but from a personnel perspective, it's hard to argue that they are better than last year.
Fair point. But the East, not as deep. You see, I think Philly could be right there once they get healthy, and obviously the Celtics without Kyrie and with Kemba, much healthier locker room. ER, always good catching up, man.
Right.
We got to do it more often.
You bet. Hey, thanks for having me on, Doug.
You got it.
Pay that man his money.
And that's certainly been the reaction because Matt has been collecting. He's been on a little bit of a heater of late, humans, although my Air Force Falcons did not get there. I wish you had been more forceful talking to me off them against Utah State last night on the road.
Well, everybody's got to make their own decisions. And, you know, I was on Air Force on Saturday and lost, and I was not going to play them in back-to-back games. I was very disappointed in the way they played. I watched the game on Saturday. Colorado State was off a game where it shot 19 for 28 from three, and I love to fade teams off lights-out shooting performances like that. And the fact that the Rams went into Kluane Arena and dominated Air Force the way they did was pretty discouraging for me, so I was not going to back Air Force again last night. But there were There were three underdogs in the Mountain West late last night. Two of those were dead dogs. And Wyoming was catching 23 against San Diego State. And the Cowboys actually covered. The lowly Cowboys, probably the worst team in the league. So, yeah, it was a bad night to back dogs in the Mountain West. Air Force didn't get there. San Jose got crushed. But that's the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I know you're big on KenPom. That's something we've discussed even going back to a year ago on the podcast. Why KenPom and how can you use it to your advantage?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm big on KenPom. I look at it a lot, but I think too many people, too many college basketball bettors use KenPom as a crutch. And the entire betting market, the numbers reflect KenPom's basically his fan match page, which shows margin of victory in each game that day. And I've always said I think the KenPom numbers are a little bit weak in November and December. You don't have a lot of data to go by. I think they're too heavily weighted, the numbers, probably on the previous season. And you can find a lot of soft spots where maybe KenPom has a game pointing this way and you handicap it and you got it pointing the other way. Trust yourself and don't be afraid to go against what the KenPom numbers say. You know, and I'll give you an example. I think you and I have talked about this before. And I was in Maui in November. I watched Dayton, and I put out a play, Dayton minus 2.5 or 3 over Virginia Tech in the second day of the Maui Invitational. And the first response I got from somebody on Twitter was, KenPom has Virginia Tech winning the game straight up. I said, you know, I don't give a damn what KenPom says about the game. I'm here watching and I'm handicapping it, and I like Dayton. And Dayton won the game by like 29 points. You know, so a lot of people just, too many people, I think, rely on the KenPom numbers and want to bet that way. And, you know, I felt like, because I watched so much Big Ten basketball, I thought Purdue was the most overrated team in the nation on KenPom. Pomeroy's had Purdue anywhere between like 7th and 17th for the last 2 months. And I don't even think Purdue's an NCAA tournament team. I've got power rated in the low 40s. And yesterday, you know, Purdue off a 26-point loss to Illinois in the first meeting was, I think, picked to win by 5. The number showed Purdue by 5 over Illinois. The betting market showed 5.5 or 6. I took the points with Illinois because I just think they're the better team. And as you know, Doug, you and I have talked about this before. I think this Purdue team's a fade.
Sure.
And, you know, Illinois runs away with the game last night. That's why, you know, we're handicappers. And Ken Pomeroy would be the first to say, you know, he's not handicapping the games. He's not trying to tell. That's just what his numbers show. But I think so many people rely on the KenPom numbers as a crutch. You can look at that, see where the lines are probably going to be, how you think people are going to bet the games, or where the betting market might move, and maybe use that to your advantage. Purdue's a fade team. I've felt that way for a long time, probably since early December. Texas is another fade team. I've felt that way for probably about a month. And it was kind of odd a couple nights ago because of Texas. There was some movement on Texas against West Virginia. That number was 10. It dropped as low as 8.5. I couldn't figure out why. Why is sharp money coming in on Texas? Texas lost the game by 30 is one of the most ridiculously bad performances I've seen by a Power 5 team in college basketball this season. You know, it was – so I would say look for teams. Go through KenPom. Look for teams you think that are overvalued or undervalued according to his numbers. You might be able to use that to your advantage.
Yeah, they lost that game by nearly 40, by the way. They were down 25, I want to say, at the half, and the second half line was pick 'em. And I think I even tweeted, I'm like, wow, Texas looks like it might just fold. It has a real chance.
Yeah, that was a joke. I think the final score might have been something like 97-59. But, I stopped watching with about 10 minutes ago. The only reason I was still watching was like a train wreck.
Yeah.
How bad could this shock a smart team be? And you look at it and you say, you can't always assume a coach is going to be better if he moves up to a bigger conference, you know, has more resources to work with. Shaka Smart's ideal place is at a mid-major where he can recruit 2- and 3-star players who want to defend for 90 feet and play wreak havoc, right? he doesn't play that style anymore, so he's not a special coach anymore. You know, he's trying to recruit 4-5-star athletes, who's a lot of these guys stick around for 1 year and they're gone, and it's just not working for him in Austin. So I think Shaka Smart's got to get back to a level where, you know, he got beat at his own game. If you watch that Bob Huggins and the way that West Virginia team pressed Virginia, the way they put the heat on Texas and the Longhorns couldn't handle it, that's how Shaka used to coach. And he's not that coach anymore, and it's not going to work for him at Texas, Doug.
And he's certainly on the hot seat because of that. But I'm glad you mentioned Ken Pom and sort of the market moves. My favorite is when the modelers line up to the situational spot. That's the best because the modelers say, look, flat spots exist. Look-ahead spots exist. They're just they're kind of arguments, so to speak, is that it's just not easy to always predict. And that's true. Sometimes we think a flat spot's coming, and it doesn't. And then you're like, huh, that's interesting. But for the most part, we love situational handicapping, and there's been opportunities throughout the season where it just kind of screams that. And last week we talked about it on Daily Wager. Michigan State was a play like no other, and they had just got their butts kicked in by Purdue the previous Sunday, had 5 days off. And, I mean, really, first half should have been the play, to be honest, if you think about it. But the game got there as well. But that was a great situational spot. It was Wisconsin off a big emotional win, and it was just a beatdown from the start. So sometimes it's so easy, and I'm hoping the Lakers tonight is a great bounce-back spot. But you got to be really kind of disciplined in picking those. And to your point, on top of that, the eye test. So, like, Purdue can be a fade with the spot and then also the eye test. Like, we had Maryland on Saturday, both of us in the chalk column, because that was a good time to back Maryland against Purdue off that big win at home against Sparty and on the road. And it was just a great, and then we got, you know, we had to fade a couple three-pointers down in the final seconds, but we got there.
Yeah, and that was more because Maryland was just bad in the second half, you know, and Maryland was really bad in the first half last night and really good in the second half. But, you know, it's Maryland was also off a two-game road trip where it lost both games, and that's why I felt like it was in a really good spot against Purdue. And I will say this, as much as, you know, I'll say Purdue's a fade or Texas is a fade, you're still going to find those teams in good spots to bet at some point. I'm more looking to fade them, but that day Purdue was at home against Michigan State, I said there's no way I would lay those points. It got bet up to 4.5. I wouldn't lay those points against Purdue at home. Purdue's typically a great home court team. Even after last night's loss to Illinois, I think Purdue's 20-2 in its past 22 home games. You know, so and that was a good spot because Purdue was a hungry home dog that day off a couple of losses. So handicapping's an art form. You know that. I mean, it's and the methods you use are not always going to work when you're talking about look ahead spots or flat spots or whatever, but I'm just saying that I like to look at Ken Pom, and I look a few days ahead because that helps you predict what the number is going to be. Sometimes I think how people are going to bet the games. It's just strange to me how the entire betting market over the past few years has kind of become a prisoner of the Ken Pom numbers. And there are a lot of really valuable numbers on that website that I use, but some numbers I don't care about at all.
Yeah, no, it's fair. It's good just to aggregate all sorts of information. But at the end,
right,
like you said, it's a very nuanced kind of industry. You just got to trust your instincts and trust your gut. But I listen to everyone and don't blindly follow anyone. So, all right, man, let's talk about a few games tonight. Since Notre Dame is playing, we're contractually obligated to talk about them because I think when you're involved in an Irish game, you're about 90% on Mike Bray's crew. Is that fair?
By the way, I will say I think sometimes you blindly follow a soccer handicapper.
Hey, I will say this. I will say this. 2 minutes in, we were watching in the pod at work. 2 minutes in, I go, all right, this team's going to win easily. Whoever's in red, they're going to win. I went and live bet them, and they were up 3-0. Sometimes you can just watch and be like, all right.
Did you log onto your app, and did it say the team in red?
No, you had to figure out the graphic.
Okay.
But I'm just telling you. I wanted to dumb it down to be like, sometimes you can just watch. It was Bournemouth, but sometimes you can just watch and be like, all right, this is obvious. Hey, sometimes you got to block out the noise, right?
You got a keen eye for soccer. You know, I find it hard to watch that stuff, but good for you.
Hey, it's action during the day. It's action during the day. Champ week doesn't start for a while. We need that afternoon action.
Syracuse, Notre Dame, the first time these teams played a couple weeks ago, I was on the Irish catching three, and they won that game 88-87. That was a wild game at the Carrier Dome. Now I'm going to flip sides. Now, I've been a little bit disappointed. I think this Mike Bray team's underachieving a little bit, and Syracuse is playing better ball. There's no question about it. Tim Boeheim got the Orange to pick up a couple of road wins at Virginia and Virginia Tech in the past 10 or 11 days. And Buddy Boeheim, they got some three-point shooters, man. Syracuse can shoot it. I think this is another type of game, just like the first meeting, that's going to go to the wire. I saw a five out there. I didn't get it. I wanted to get the five on Syracuse. I'll take the 4.5. Like I said, I'm a little bit disappointed in Notre Dame's current form and just the fact these teams are meeting for the second time in such a short time span. In fact, I think it was early January. Let me get you the exact date on that.
I think that was the game Pfluger got hurt, right?
Yeah, it's January 4th. Yeah, it was when these teams first played, 88-87. Like I said, I was on the Irish in the first one. I'm going to flip and take Syracuse plus 4.5 here. I think the Irish stole that one in a way at the Carrier Dome, and I think Syracuse got a great shot to win this game. So if you feel that way, take the 4.5 points.
All right, good stuff there. But and the Big Ten, we've mentioned in the past, but the home court has just been off the charts this year. It's gotten to be like 41-8 or something ridiculous straight up, and about 65% cover percentage as well for home teams in the Big Ten. But obviously Purdue, it happened last night. Illinois wire-to-wire to winner. What do you think of this Penn State-Michigan game?
Purdue actually led that game by 1 point at the half last night and got
really?
Boilermakers got the doors blown off in the second half, kind of like Northwestern got destroyed the second half with a 14-point lead last night. So you're going to see a little bit of regression in that Big Ten home court trend in the second half. There's no doubt about it. Okay, as far as this game, I'm leaning Michigan here. The Wolverines have been they're kind of limping into this game. They've lost, three of the past four? But all three losses were on the road during that stretch. And Isaiah Livers is – I always mispronounce it. Isaiah Livers has got his groin injury, and he's questionable. I was trying to look. I didn't see an update on this yet today. I think questionable is as good as you're going to find. He's probably a game-time decision. Michigan's totally, a different team without him. Not nearly as good offensively, and I think that's a major reason why Michigan's been in this current slide. Like I said, losing three of the past four. You think about it, this is a team that beat Gonzaga by 18 points on a neutral, in the Bahamas in late November. So Michigan's got a ton of potential when fully healthy, but they're not at that point right now. Penn State's off a big revenge game. Got torched by Ohio State and Columbus the first time around. Got payback against the Buckeyes over the weekend. I like Michigan a little bit in this game. I'm leaning Michigan. I'd like to know if Livers is going to play or not. That would put me on Michigan for sure if he is. But, his groin injuries are tricky, man. They don't heal quickly. So I'm not anticipating he's going to play. But Michigan is 18-2 straight up, and it's past 20 at home. And, this is another hungry home team here that desperately needs a win. I mean, it's not guaranteed that Michigan's going to be in the NCAA tournament. I think it's a pretty good chance Wolverines will. But they're going to have to start winning some games here in the second half. And, when they're shorthanded, it's been difficult lately. I lean Michigan minus 5, but like I said, I have not played that yet, but that's one I'm looking at. Doug, I'll ask you quickly. There are 14 teams, obviously, in the Big Ten, and two of those 14 have been eliminated from tournament contention at this point. That's Nebraska and Northwestern. I think Purdue is on thin ice. I think Iowa, Minnesota might be in a little bit of trouble. Joey Brackett's had 12 Big Ten teams in his NCAA field about a week ago. I think the conference gets definitely 9 and maybe 10 in the tournament. What do you think?
Well, we got Rutgers in. Rutgers is ranked.
Rutgers is in. Rutgers in.
A rare ranked matchup between Iowa and Rutgers tonight. That was interesting. So it's just fascinating to me that Ohio State somehow has crumbled to 2-5 in conference play. I can't believe it, just given how great Wesson looked. And, he physically looks great, but just how well he was playing. I think if Ohio State and Michigan do a little damage in the postseason tournament, like their conference tournament, I think they're in. I think they get there. I think just like the brand name, all that stuff. And it's a wide open year, so that's also the thing we need to compare it. I think it's going to be one of those things where the automatic bid tournaments are going to play a huge role in this, like they always do. But I think this year particularly, because there's going to be so many bubble teams with all these fringe teams. I mean, right now, can you really make a case that Minnesota and Indiana are that much better than Ohio State and Michigan? I think the second half of the conference season is going to really dictate a lot.
You know, Indiana's got a nice, I think, 16-point home win over Florida State. Not much else on that Indiana resume that jumps out at you. You know, Ohio State and Michigan both have some pretty high-quality wins. I think those teams are in pretty good position, even with the recent slumps. I would think Minnesota and Purdue are the first teams on the bubble in the Big Ten. I think Rutgers in a pretty good position, like you said. Anyway, we'll talk about more of tonight's games.
Yeah, I know you tracked the UNLV Running Rebels. It was your former beat on the loss at the Las Vegas Review-Journal, and they've been kind of a nice, pleasant surprise this year, at least for my eyes. What do you make of their game tonight?
UNLV is 7-1 in its past eight games. I mean, things were looking pretty bleak for this team. And then the turnaround came in late December. But I will caution one thing here. The Rebels, during this 7-1 stretch, have only one road win, and that was at Wyoming in overtime. And that was a game that looked like the Rebels were, you know, they were trailing going to the last minute. It looked like they were going to lose. Somehow got the game to overtime. And then covered as 7-point favorites in overtime. That was one of the bad beats of the season if you had Wyoming in the points in that one. But, this team hasn't proven to me it can win on the road against a quality opponent yet. And also, San Diego State's on deck. Now, that's another game to talk about. Rebels host San Diego State on Sunday. She got a huge game. I know those guys have one eye on that game. This is a rivalry game tonight. But, you know, a lot of the guys on the UNLV team didn't grow up in Nevada. They don't care that much about a rivalry with Reno. They're thinking about trying to knock off 20-0 San Diego State on Sunday at home. So you got a bit of a look-ahead spot. You got a team here that hasn't proven it can win against quality opponents on the road. And you can lay 4.5 with Nevada. That's the way I'm leaning. I haven't bet this one yet either, but I probably will by tonight's tip-off be on Nevada. Minus 4.5 right in that range.
Yeah, that feels like the right spot because of all the.
You know, if you watched over the weekend, by the way, the Wolfpack went down to San Diego and led the Aztecs at halftime by one. Played a really good first half. I mean, this team's capable of playing well. I've seen flashes of really good basketball from Nevada. Of course,
they're young though, aren't they?
Yeah, of course. Well, they got a couple of experienced guards. I mean, they're not baby-faced or anything like that. So, and Steve Alford, I think, is doing a pretty good coaching job. He's got these guys playing better. This is a late tip, by the way. It's like the last game on the regular board rotation tonight, 8:57, 8:58. So you got time to make up your mind on that. I think it's going to be a running game. It's going to be an entertaining, fast-paced game. The total is 147. Or 146.5. I would probably look over. Both these teams have been playing fast-paced with a lot of possessions, and I think this will be that type of game. But I would lean Nevada in the over tonight and Reno.
All right, let's go to look ahead to the weekend, just because the nature of our podcast schedule and the nature of basketball being day-to-day, football is obviously much more of a better fit. But there's some games you have circled on. Let's start with Marquette Butler on Friday.
Okay, I'll be brief on this because I haven't done a lot of work on it, but I think you might have a situation setting up that could be a decent play on Butler. The Bulldogs, hey, they were a number one seed in Joe Lunardi's bracketology a week ago. Guess what? They've lost 3 in a row. Marquette's won 3 in a row. You got two of the best scorers in the Big East going head-to-head here. Marcus Howard, he had 32 last night. Kamar Baldwin, he's a big-time scorer. This guy can get his shots off in a variety of ways. I think, you know, you're going to have a hungry home team in the Butler Bulldogs here off a 3-game losing streak. It's going to be Butler or pass. I'm not sure where that number is going to come. I would think somewhere around Butler minus 4 or 5, but I actually have not looked ahead on Ken Pom yet to see where he projects that game. But I would say 4 or 5 would be a fair number to lay with Butler on Friday. I think the Bulldogs we'll snap that losing streak.
Yeah, I mean, the shine's off of them a little. You know, they've lost three straight now after losing to Villanova last night. But you're right, the better spot, and it's off at, obviously at Hinkle there. Saturday, Big 12 SEC showdown. Now, I've not been impressed with Kentucky, all things considered. I was on the Bulldogs last night, got there, snuck under the number there. And this Texas Tech team might be kind of coming, sort of, well, like blossoming, if you will.
I wouldn't say that if you watched last night's game.
Yeah, but that, know, I've bet Red against Raiders them enough lost. And lost.
Yeah, Red Raiders lost last night in Fort Worth, TCU. Pretty dismal offensive performance. That's, you know, one thing Chris Beard struggled with this team is consistency, and he had Jamias Ramsey was out for a while during that losing streak early in the season. So Texas Tech really, I don't think has put together a long stretch of really good basketball yet, but I'm not going to bet against Tech off a loss playing in Lubbock against a Kentucky team that I think is I would say rather pedestrian by John Calipari's standards. You know, it's not a great three-point shooting team. I don't think you have the high-end NBA lottery picks on this roster like Calipari's had in the past. This is going to be Chris Beard off a loss at home, weighing a small number. I think I'll probably be on Tech on Saturday, but that's just a look ahead. At this point, it's early in the week, but that's one game I have circled at this point.
What about Baylor, Florida? In Gainesville, number one ranked team.
You know, I've been looking for spots to fade Baylor, and I took 10 with Oklahoma on Monday night. And even though I'm not crazy about the Oklahoma team, Lon Kruger's another guy. He's got his team playing better basketball right now. Yep. Austin Reeves shot 2 for 10 from three. If Austin Reeves knocks down an open three in transition with 7 seconds left, Baylor gets knocked off the number one spot Monday night.
I'm Bears surprised they went for the three. They had a layup, I thought.
Could have, but, you know, Reeves is typically a really good shooter, and I didn't mind the decision by the point guard to hit the wide-open shooter in the corner for the three.
Yeah.
You know, when you're on the road in a situation like that, I thought it was okay. Reeves just didn't make the shot. You know, if he makes it, nobody second-guesses that decision. I kind of like the decision by the point guard. He was wide open, Doug. He was, you know, he was kind of floating a little bit, didn't get his feet set.
Correct.
That's what bothered me. But anyway.
But that's not on Reeves the passer, to your point, yeah.
Yeah, Reeves had a little bit of an off night. If he shoots a little better, Baylor gets knocked off, and I think this Baylor team is going to get knocked off. Now, Florida's Mike White's got Florida playing a little bit better, and the Gators lost by 2 last night at LSU. They're off that blowout win. That was a really good spot Saturday to play Florida against Auburn. I think this is a pretty good spot to play Florida against Baylor. The Bears are an elite defensive team. I think they're a little bit limited offensively. I don't want to say Baylor and San Diego State are similar teams, but because I think the personnel is a little bit different. But both are really good on the defensive end of the floor, and I think both are going to go through offensive droughts and get some offensive shortcomings. On the road here, the Bears did win at Allen Fieldhouse and beat Kansas. That was a huge win. That's a big reason why they're number one in the nation right now. I think the Gators got a good shot to get them, and this is probably going to be Baylor minus one, right? The number one team in the nation has got to be favored by a little bit on the road. Baylor one and a half. I'm going to look at the Gators as home dogs in this spot, and I know a lot of bettors out there, a lot of sharp bettors who've been trying to fade Baylor game after game, and I think that's going to happen again Saturday.
No, I agree. I think that's the only side I would play. I mean, they get me every once in a while. They got me on Saturday with Okie State second half. I mean, I just haven't had a good read on this damn team.
They covered
the game line in Stillwater too. It's just insane.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think you had a good read on that game if you played Oklahoma State. That was the right side, just the wrong result. I mean, Baylor should not have covered that game. That's the bottom line.
No, I mean they were just bombing threes down the stretch, and Okie State crumbled. You get that with bad teams, but All right, bud. Well, good stuff as always. Really enjoy kind of rolling up the sleeves and diving deep into this stuff because basketball is now in the forefront with just one game left in the Super Bowl. Do you have any early play on the Super Bowl at all before we let you go?
I do not. I'll talk more about that next week. I'll look forward to seeing our buddy John Murray at the Westgate Superbook on Thursday night when all the props go up. There's going to be too bad you can't make it out there, Doug. There's going to be, you know, everybody from the Las Vegas betting community is going to be at the Westgate Superbook on Thursday night. It's kind of like you know, the twice a year get together. It's for Super Bowl props, and then August when the Superbook has its big golf tournament. But it's always look forward to that, man, when the props go up. I have not taken a stance on the side or the total, even though I have an idea what I'm going to play. I don't want to say anything on record in case I, you know, decide to change my mind this week. But I will definitely have my pick in mind by the weekend for sure.
Makes perfect sense. I am on the it's a coin flip, and I will only be firing on prop bets stance right now. So great, as always, Matt. Appreciate it, and we'll talk to you on the TV airwaves soon as well.
Okay, you bet. Thanks, Doug.
That guy is kryptonite on a stick.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Boy, is it. And actually, you can make a case that the UFC is now got some kicking is for losers moments. And I'm going to explain that in a little bit. That's what we call a tease in the business, because I want to get your opinion on that, Murray. But first,
okay.
I mean, NFC Championship game, you force a three and out. You get the ball. You drive to midfield. Yeah. You have a Hall of Fame quarterback on the 50-yard line, fourth and one. Why do you punt?
It's absolutely ridiculous. And I saw, I think it was Mike Lombardi said he thought that LaFleur coached that conference championship game about as poorly as he's ever seen a coach coach a conference championship game. And I can't say I disagree. Just totally outmatched by the 49ers.
It is just criminal to do that. And I've said it before. We always talk about players coaching, but coaches choke as well, and referees choke as well. We saw that in the NFC title game a year ago with the refs. And coaches, sometimes the moment can be too big for a decision. And it's happened time and time again. It's just coaching malpractice to do that. And we talk about it, rule of thumb, what do the Niners want you to do? They want you to punt.
Of course they do. Of course they want you to punt. I also thought later in the game that the Green Bay was probably happy when the 49ers punted. I think they were on like the Green Bay 40, fourth and one, up by 14. They've run for about 100 or 1,000 yards in the game. And I was a little surprised to see Shanahan punt that ball away, but ultimately it didn't matter.
Yeah, I think some of that's just the 28-3 blown lead kind of rearing its ugly head for Shanahan. We saw that with the Vikings second half game and them. But in the end,
well, we saw it in week 17 against Seattle, where he almost blew that game. The Niners almost blew that game to the Seahawks. Probably should have blown that game to the Seahawks without an assist from the refs. And if that had happened, 49ers would have been the 5 seed, and I don't think we'd be talking about them playing Kansas City in the Super Bowl.
Probably not. Probably not. I just thought everything broke their way. And look, they got the lead with the rushing attack, and they were the better team for sure on Sunday. But that Packers decision obviously could have really changed the game. If the Packers get a lead, then maybe Garoppolo presses a little bit. You never know. But we do have the Chiefs and Niners, and you've seen some action on the over, and you've seen a little action on some buyback on the Niners, right?
Here, it's really mostly been over money. The side, there's more money on Kansas City. There has been some action on San Francisco as well. But so far, the big decision for us is the total. You've got all these straight bets on the over. You've also got all the parlays are going to the over, whether they're parlaying it 49ers and over or Chiefs and over. It's all going to the over. So as of now, it looks like our big need in this game will be the game staying under. And of course, the game staying under and being a little more on the boring side is generally good for us in the prop markets as well.
Yeah, so we'll talk about props in a moment. But I thought you guys took some sharp bets on the Niners, no?
I don't know about sharp bets on the Niners. Okay. There's been some money on, like, when we were at 1.5, a couple guys grabbed 1.5 with San Francisco. I don't know how much of a difference it is between taking +1 and +1.5. But no, so far it's just, the side has just been pretty split, but mostly Kansas City.
Well, based on our database, and I know the Seahawks Patriots a few years ago was a pick'em at some shops. We did not have that, so we've never had in our database a pick'em line. Do you think we'll get pick'em once kickoff arrives a week from Sunday?
I think it's possible that you'll get enough. You'll get. There's going to be so much public money on Kansas City, but I think the sharp guys are going to bet San Francisco. So it just depends on how hard they come in on the 49ers. It wouldn't surprise me if we did see some pick 'em as we got closer to kickoff.
Yeah, I think this line
it doesn't seem like the wise guys seem like they're not going to let the number get pushed up any higher. Like if you're waiting to bet San Francisco +3, you're going to be waiting.
I agree. I don't think it's going up. I think it's coming down, and I think we could see pick 'em by kickoff. I think the weather might change things a little bit, especially that total. Look, it's outdoors. I know it's South Florida, but hey, the only Super Bowl I've been to was the Peyton Manning, Rex Grossman Super Bowl over a decade ago. That was rain. So you never know with an outdoor stadium.
Oh, I agree. And I do think that I think the consensus from some of the sharper guys I've talked about here is that San Francisco is a slightly better team than Kansas City. Not saying there's a big gap. I just think San Francisco is a little bit more of a complete team, probably a better coached team. And we saw how undisciplined Kansas City was defensively in the first half. I don't think they're going to be able to get away with that against the 49ers. And Kansas City fell behind in both of their AFC playoff games. And I don't think they're going to be able to get away with that against the 49ers either, because the 49ers are so good at running the ball and they're so good defensively.
True, but things unfolded quite conveniently for the Niners. They got Minnesota and Niners playoff opener. They got the Vikings on a short week on the road and a skittish quarterback who is just like kryptonite with a defensive front like that. So it was just a perfect kind of first opponent for them.
I agree with you, but there's very few teams recently that had the bracket break better for them than Kansas City.
Fact.
Kansas City got every break in the world. I mean, they got a break even before the playoffs started when New England somehow lost to the Dolphins in Week 17, and Kansas City got a bye. And then obviously the Titans did them a huge favor going into Baltimore for them so that they wouldn't have to go on the road and win at the Ravens, and they could have the conference championship game at home. You know, I've been saying all year I think Mahomes is by far the best player in the world, but Kansas City very fortunate in how everything broke for them this year to get them to the Super Bowl.
100% agree on that front. I guess my point is we can't put too much stock in how the games unfolded because since you brought it up so eloquently, I think both teams caught a break in terms of how things have unfolded. And sometimes you need that, but I guess what I'm saying is I'm not expecting the Chiefs to fall down two scores like we saw the first two rounds.
I don't think so either, but just some questionable coaching decisions from Kansas City on Sunday caught my eye. I mean, how about when the Titans lined up to punt down by 17,
oh my God.
And they went with a fake punt, and the Chiefs didn't see it coming, and they actually got a first down. After on the third down play, they threw a pass that made it like a more manageable fourth down. Just send your defense out on the field. If they punt it, if they're dumb enough to punt it and it goes over your safety's head and rolls 10 yards, don't worry about it because you just got the ball back up by 17 in the fourth quarter. I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah. No, I know. You, there's a, what is that, high school coach down in Georgia, I think it is, who just doesn't even put a guy back. He's like, you're punting, you're giving up, we'll take it wherever it lands.
I know that Kevin Kelly, the high school coach in Arkansas, he doesn't punt or kick field goals. He just goes for it on every fourth down.
Right.
But I respect that guy, too. If there's another coach out there that I don't know about that doesn't put a punt returner back, I'd like to read about him, too.
I think it might be Kelly. I think we might talk about the same guy. Yeah. Anyways, so I was out in Las Vegas a year ago for prop betting, doing a story both for television and writing a story as well for .com. And I won't be out there, but it is quite the spectacle, and that is Thursday night. Are you guys ready?
Yeah, Thursday night at 7 o'clock our time, we're going to turn all the props on and – you know, it is a spectacle, and it's fun. You got wise guys from all over the world that come out here to nail us on those props. And we write a ton of money that first night. But the funny thing is, usually the bets that those guys are making, and I'm speaking in generalities, usually those are the bets that we're going to be rooting for come kickoff next weekend. Because they're betting a lot of things under. They're betting a lot of no's. Will this guy score a touchdown? No. Will there be a safety? No. Will there be a successful two-point conversion? No. And usually that's the stuff we're rooting for when we get the kickoff.
Do you think you're going to hang? I don't think you were rooting for the 100-1.
No.
No touchdown the first half like last year.
Yeah. And that was the funny thing last year was we had told our executive team, root for a boring game, basically. I mean, you want to put it as plainly as you can. Root for nothing to happen, and we should do very well on props. Well, we didn't want that little to happen. You know, we didn't want nobody to score a touchdown. That's the kind of thing when you're telling your top brass, like, here's what we need, here's what we don't need, it never even occurred. It never occurred to me, I'll tell you that much, to say, hey, root for someone on one of the two teams to score a touchdown. That never crossed my mind.
Well, I got ridiculed for 2 weeks. 2 weeks of podcasting, talking about that prop and it hit, so I felt like a little...
Who was ridiculing you, man?
Well, they just thought it was extreme. Like, come on.
Yeah?
Enough of this. It's one thing to mention the prop, but I kind of overkilled it in their eyes. But anyways...
Your Twitter trolls out there were giving you a hard time?
They're not trolls. They give us feedback sometimes, you know? All right, my man. Yeah, so I see a prop I already like.
Okay.
Caesars posted this one. A little early lean here. Early nibble. Odds on no rushing touchdown for the Chiefs.
Okay.
Plus 250.
You got a team total. What's the Chiefs team total? Like 27.5?
Yeah, I'm assuming 27-ish.
Yeah, you got to think one of them is going to be on the ground. But I know that Kansas City does live through the air, obviously, with the best quarterback in the league, and San Francisco is very, very good defensively, so that might be a nice plus for you to get involved in.
Yeah, plus 250, I think. You know? A little early action, nibble.
Not bad. You're just chomping at the bit to start firing on these props.
The plus 250 means 29%. Do you think there's better than a 29% of that chance of that happening?
Okay. Yeah. But I need you to do this for me. I need you to pace yourself. We've got a long way to go here. It's not even Super Bowl week yet. We've got the harrowing bye week this weekend with the Pro Bowl. And then we've got, it's kind of funny. Tomorrow is going to be super busy with the props. Then Friday will also be very busy with the prop excitement. Saturday is going to be busy because of college hoops. Sunday, this place will be completely dead. And then it'll get progressively busier as we get closer to the weekend. And then certainly by Friday, very, very busy at the counter.
Well, I'm already on record, and I'll share this. I hate the game as a bettor. I hate the side is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I just don't think there's an edge anywhere in picking who's going to win this game. I just think it's going to be an awesome game. So I need to fire on props.
As much as I joke about NFL, I am actually genuinely interested in this matchup. I think it's a fresh matchup. We're nothing against the Patriots, but it is nice if you're an outsider to not have to sit through another Patriots Super Bowl. I think we can all agree on that, unless you're a New England fan, obviously. The only thing I will say, I think the total is too high. I think you can go under 54.5 right now at a few shops in town. I see Caesars, South Pointer at 54.5. I think that number's too high, but I mean, we'll see. Kansas City is so explosive on offense, and San Francisco has such a good ground game, and the Chiefs have struggled to stop the run. I just think that the total is a little inflated, but I agree with you about the side. I don't know how you can get an edge with this line of Kansas City -1, 1.5. The game is just a total toss-up.
I agree with you with the total. I'm hoping it goes up, and keep an eye on that weather as well. If I had to pick a side or total, I would play under. But I almost don't – like you said, I still feel confident that, you know, it's still a random game. Like, not a random, but I just don't see an edge even in the total.
There's just – you got to explain this to everybody, and I'm sure everybody understands this, but – you don't have to bet on the Super Bowl. Like there's going to be so many games and so many fights, and like there's all this college basketball that weekend. There's NBA. There's hockey. There's probably UFC. I think there is. I mean, you don't feel like you need to bet a side in the Super Bowl just because it's the Super Bowl. Now I want you to, because I'm a bookmaker. I want you to come in and bet on the Super Bowl. But I'm just saying there's probably other places you could invest your money where you'll have a little bit more of an edge than in the Super Bowl side market, which is usually pretty tight.
And you have live betting, too. So
yeah, that's true, too.
You could probably talk me into a teaser plus 7.5 or 7.5 or 8 if he gets there.
Yeah.
But other than that, I still don't – like. Again, what are you going to tease it with, like the Knicks on Sunday morning? I mean, I don't
– You could do an open teaser to some of those XFL games. Maybe like you could San Francisco plus 7.5 to the Seattle Dragons – the following weekend at the DC Defenders. Just an idea.
You think that XFL betting market's going to be pretty tight, that 6 points is worth it?
I've done like 3 or 4 XFL interviews already this year. So I consider myself to be something of an expert on it.
Well, we're going to be talking a lot about it. I know Levy, the voice of the XFL, is fired up for it.
Is he?
Yeah, yeah.
The XFL landed Steve Levy. That's a pretty good get, man. Steve Levy's good.
I agree. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And
it's a good get for them.
So I'm,
Steve Levy's really good, actually.
He asked me a couple of betting. He's like, who's the favorite? Who's this? I was like, I don't know. So
I don't know either. I do interviews about it all the time, apparently. I don't know anything. You just got to fake it till you make it, man.
I'm going just like we saw with the AFL, was it called, a couple years
AAF.
Ago?
AAF. Okay, sorry. The Alliance of American Football.
A lot of unders in the first week, right? All the unders hit the first couple of weeks?
You know what we really saw, all kidding aside, was those first couple of weekends, people were, they missed football so much, and they were really firing on it. I mean, not like big time, but people were absolutely betting it those first few weeks. But what happened is the calendar flipped to March, and everyone's attention went to college basketball, and it never came back to AAF. And then the league eventually folded. I mean, the league had bigger problems than people watching college basketball. I'm not saying that. But I'm just talking in terms of our betting here at the Westgate. Once college hoop season started, or ramped up into the postseason, I should say, everybody kind of forgot about the AAF.
Well, it's a tough road ahead. I covered the UFL when I was in Vegas. I've mentioned Jim Fossil did the coaches show. Now, that was concurrent with the NFL, but it was on like Wednesday
Sean
night,
McVay
Thursday nights.
Sean McVay was an assistant coach in that league. I think he was on Jay Gruden's staff.
Oh, the Florida Taskers.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't realize that because I covered those press conferences when the Taskers had a big win at Sam Boyd Stadium against the Las Vegas Locos. And I know Jim Haslett was on this. The big names were the coaches. Haslett. Denny Green was the coach of one of the teams, I think the Sacramento team. I forget who the Hartford Colonials coach was. That might have been the
Hartford
name.
Hartford Colonials.
Oh, yeah.
I just
– oh, yeah.
It looks like it was Chris Palmer. He was the guy from the – Browns. Like, wasn't he the expansion Browns coach?
Yeah, dude, try doing like a 30-minute – coaches show on like a six team league with only two games per week. A lot of buys.
That sounds like a long show.
It's tough to do a 30-minute show when the Locos did not play.
Did you know that the owner and president of the...
I had a lot of highlights. There were like 7-minute highlights for one game.
The owner and president of the Florida Tuskers was Joe Theismann. That I didn't know. I am officially down the rabbit hole here. Of the whatever this league was called.
All right, we're scraping the barrel. Let's get back to the headlines. Zion, any props for you guys?
Yeah, we did. You know, we it's a good question. We put it up tonight. We just put up his points and his rebounds. And it, tough numbers to make, I think, because you don't have anything to go on. You don't have any regular season games to go on. And you don't know how many minutes he's going to play, right? I mean, I think that's something you've really got to look at tonight is – how many minutes do you really think the Pelicans are going to play Zion? We opened his points number at 14.5, and we opened his rebound number at 6.5, and we took some small bets from some sharper players, and we moved down to 14 and 6 respectively. But I think they're tough numbers to make because you just don't know what to expect from these guys tonight, or from Zion tonight. Excuse me.
Right. Yeah, I'm over 5.5 rebounds already. That number's gone up a little bit. It's exciting.
Well, how many minutes do you think he's going to play? I think is the real question.
I think he'll be
like
fine.
Like 15 to 20 minutes?
I think more. They need him if they're thin with Favors and Okafor. But I just think, like, I think nowadays you don't bring guys back early. I think you bring them back and it's fresh legs. Legler talks about it all the time. That first game, fresh legs, is really favorable.
Oh, that makes sense, especially this time of year where the guys are starting to get a little tired before the All-Star break. If I'm the Pelicans, I'm not really too worried about hunting down the 8th seed this year. Zion Williamson is that franchise, and they got to make sure they do whatever's best for him.
Right. All right, my man. Well, big move in the Bonanza. A lot of pressure.
You had the teaser, right?
Yeah, two dimes on the teaser. You got your nickel play on the Chiefs. Solid work there.
Easy win.
We're about even, I think, actually, now that I think about it. I'll have the exact numbers next week when we got to get our plays. Yeah. Maybe we got to avoid some sneakiness, like some Price is Right stuff. So maybe I need to snail mail you my plays.
I've seen, you know, I've seen kids on Twitter tweeted us saying that they would be willing to, like, do the accounting for the Bonanza next season. It could be a possible intern situation, like a Darren intern situation. I think we should explore that. I've always wanted to have, like, a Darren under my wing.
Yeah, some guy tweeted at me, too. And so basically, it's not like it's, like, too much to handle. I have a spreadsheet. I just sometimes don't bring that laptop to the taping of the pod, and I forgot
it
one time.
You got a lot going on. That's why you need a Darren. He can set up a high tee with a Mr. Newman, something like that for you.
I used to have interns when I lived in Vegas at Channel 13. I had a lot of interns. They've gone on to successful.
Was it as funny as it was on Seinfeld?
No. We were all business. I made him take a grammar quiz to start because they had to write for the website. You know, you gotta get buttoned up. They're all in successful broadcasting careers. So I'm really proud of all those wannabe Darrens, if you will. All right, man. Great stuff as always. Good luck with the props, and we'll have a very elaborate podcast schedule next week. So we'll stick and move.
Yeah, next week I'll have a lot to report. There's really not much to report now. Seriously, we had one bet. A guy went over 52.5 for 100,000, 110 to win 100,000. And there's been some nibbles in the prop market. The generic props are up, but next week when we talk, I'll have all kinds of sharp action to report on props, and we can dive more into the matchup.
Looking forward to it, as always, Mr. Executive Director.
All right, talk to you later.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
All right, that does it for this podcast, a pretty deep and extensive dive into football and – well, hold on, let's just start over. All right, that's going to do it for this podcast. Three-man weave, if you will. So thanks to professional bettor Aaron Rinning, Matt Humans of Vegas Stats Information Network, and as always, Mr. Executive Director John Murray of the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook. A fun time of year. Hoops picking up steam. We got the SEC Big 12 Challenge or whatever they're calling it this weekend. Obviously, the prop bets coming out tomorrow. And thanks to everyone. Hope you all enjoyed it. We got a Zion flavor tonight. Travis, you got to lean on the Zion props?
I just want to see him go out there and put a dunk down.
Well, it's crazy. The highlight video of practice. Now, forget Summer League. The practice, when he was dunking on like other NBA guys and they were just astonished at his athleticism. Now, this goes back to the summer, but still, I'm expecting something off the charts tonight for sure.
We talking about practice, man.
Yes, we are, because that's all we have. But we're going to be talking about games finally tonight with Zion. Really good stuff. It's just exciting. And to have another star that has a lot of eyeballs on. I'm sure ESPN's very appreciative.
You're watching what John Morant's doing, so I think people really want to see him step it up and do the same.
Well, yeah, and that's a discussion, too. John Morant's minus 1,000, so 1 to 10 odds to win Rookie of the Year. Zion is less than half of season. Would you take him at 16 to 1? I would not. I think Morant's going to win this thing, but, of course, if he starts putting up 20 and 10 the rest of the year, why not? Something to consider. Okay. Next week, Super Bowl podcast. I'm going to be in Miami for a day, so Travis and I are going to iron out the schedule for the podcast, but maybe even do two next week with all the Super Bowl props, and we're going to get some good voices on as well. All right, until then, though, enjoy your weekend. Finally, I get an off weekend in terms of Saturday and Sunday, so back-to-back off days. I'm looking forward to that, but we'll be back to the grind next week ahead of the Super Bowl.